Hey, good evening, everyone. I want to welcome you to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets podcast. Of course, we're doing it through the African-American athlete, the editor, Ricky Hampton. I want to welcome everyone tonight. I have a very special guest. I've been doing a lot of shows, and, you know, I've had some guys like Oscar Robertson, George Gervin, Julius Irvin, et cetera. Tonight I have a guy very special to me. I don't even think he knows how special he is. This gentleman was an enforcer in the NBA, played double-figure years in the NBA, had a heck of a career at Wichita State. I want to welcome Mr. Antoine Big Dog Carr to the show. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, brother. I'm doing good.
Thanks for coming on the show, Antoine.
We got the original Big Dog on there tonight.
There you go. The old BB.
Antoine, could you tell
yes,
the
sir.
Listeners a little bit about how you started your path to the NBA, starting pretty much with your college career? I know how well you did at Wichita State. Could you kind of fill the people in a little bit, if you don't mind?
Oh, well, originally I started with a program that was called Biddy Basketball. I don't think they have it anymore. They have something similar. Kind of like the AAU, but except we didn't play as many games in one day. And then, of course, I went on to high school. I played with Darnell Valentine, one of the great point guards for Portland. And then, of course, I went on to college, played with Cliff Livingston, Xavier McDaniels, and quite a few other guys. And, you know, just kept my nose to the grindstone, kept going.
When you were in college, I kept up with your career, and I know it was, man, it's rare. You have guys like X-Man was doing well. You had Cliff Livingston, guys like yourself. They have you rated as the third best player in Wichita State, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't like to put numbers on it a lot of times, but you are without a doubt one of the greatest players to ever come out of there. I have to ask you. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Hey, dog, people don't know. It's funny. I wanted to cover your NBA career because you know how the last time I saw you was actually at the end of my career in the ABA, and we'll get to that a little later on. When you went to the NBA, I know you played with the Atlanta Hawks. Tell us, what was it like with your first experience being a rookie and going into the NBA, something very fresh and very new for you?
Well, I got through the rules. I came in and I had to go against Larry Bird, some of them guys, first off, as soon as I got into Atlanta. So I was kind of having fun at the time because, you know, I thought I was a pretty good player. So I came in talking a little mess and learned real quickly that as a rookie, you don't do that. You never run in there and run your mouth.
Ricky, let me say this really quick, because it's funny, because the Big Dog, he mentioned Larry Bird first, and you know how I feel about Larry Bird. Big Dog, I'll tell you, Ricky and I have talked about it several times. You know, I played in that era of Mike, Jordan, and those guys, but for me, the hardest guy I ever had to guard was Larry Bird.
Yeah, because he was always saying, like, if you look at him, it's like, well, this boy's all right. I don't think he can really play. And then all of a sudden you get to watching the little bitty things he do, the slow movements, all of a sudden he shoots a shot quickly. And you go, okay, now I've got to readjust my whole idea on this guy. I mean, he's a beast, man. He was a beast.
I tell you, Antoine, I am so excited to have you on the show tonight. Yeah, I think you guys, you and Derek, you guys came up, and the NBA is always great. It's a great game today. But that era you guys came up through was one of the best of all time. It was a physical game, but guys still got a chance to show their athleticism. What do you think about the transition of the NBA from your era to what we have today?
Are you talking about ballet basketball? No. you know, I mean, the game now is made to speed it up, I guess, for people to enjoy the game more as far as the offensive end. I'm on the other end. I like to see that old school style, that banging, that we're going to work attitude. I'd rather see the going to work attitude than the going to dance attitude.
Absolutely. And Derek, I want to ask Antoine, he was drafted the number 8th overall pick by the Pistons, where I am here in Detroit. But Derek, you ended up playing, I'm sorry, Antoine, you played overseas. I think you played in Italy your first couple of years.
Yeah, I played.
You came back.
I ended up playing with a friend of mine's dad's team. And, of course, at that time, Mike D'Antoni and Coach Peterson was there, and that's part of the reason I went.
Now, you were number 8th overall pick. Why did you not sign with the Pistons?
Well, the Pistons, to me, were kind of messing around. They really didn't want to seem to sign me. They kept coming up with excuses. Oh, well, we think this may be wrong with your shin. It may be wrong with this and that. And like I told them, I said, look, you know, I'm going to make a decision within 24 hours. You have 24 hours to make. Well, by the time they got to me, I was on the plane daily.
Wow. They really missed you on that one, man, because the style they played a few years later with Isaiah and Rick and all those guys was perfect for your game.
Yeah, I would have loved to play with them. Of course, Cliff Livingston, my teammate, was there, so I was all hyped up, ready to go, but, you know, we could never really get it going, and I could never get them to believe in what I was able to do. So they traded me to Atlanta, and I did my job there.
Yeah, and you did it very well, man. I mean, 17 years in the National Basketball Association. Not many people can say they put that kind of time in, Antoine.
Well, I was extremely lucky. I had a great family that worked with me and helped me get along with everything. And, of course, once I got to Atlanta, you know, I had good brothers like Dominique Wilkins and Kevin Willis, and I name a whole bunch of guys, you know, that just helped me out. They were guys that ended up knowing exactly what was going on.
You guys had some great battles too with the Celtics, and were you there when they went up against the Pistons? Yep, I think you were.
Oh yeah, trust me, I was there when Isaiah did his little dance down there at the end when he hit that one shot.
You got a good memory, my friend.
Well, you know, he did, as they used to say there at the game, he does it to everybody.
Ricky, I want to ask, Antoine, you, a lot of people, you know, they talk about the game of basketball, and they, you know, a lot of people wish they could have experienced just one day in the NBA. And you, to me, everyone that's played in the NBA, they don't have any scrubs in there. And when you go play these games and then you have a guy on your team, tell me what it was like playing with a guy like with Dominique Wilkins, who I consider one of the greatest players of all time.
Oh, it was phenomenal. I mean, some of the things you were able to see just in practice alone, let alone getting to see it in the game. But to see some of the stuff these guys were able to do in practice was incredible. You know, I've seen Dominique dunk on people in all kind of facets, and you would never believe possible. You know, turning your back on somebody and then they bump you, you turn around and still dunk on them. Unbelievable.
Hey, Kevin Willis.
Kevin Willis dunking on you, leaning in, a big 7-footer that took off from the line. I mean, I had unreal players with me.
Those are great teams, man. Those are great teams. Hey, Antoine, you are a versatile player, too. I mean, you could score when you needed to score. I mean, you had a season in Sacramento. You averaged 18 one year, 20 the next year. Early on in Atlanta, did you just not look to score that much because of
the
way the season was?
That wasn't my job.
Yeah.
You know, I've always been a player. I kind of follow whatever the coach wants me to do. If he needs me to score, I can go out and score. If he needs me to play defense, I'm a defensive player. If he needs me as a guy coming off the bench to give you quick points and some defense, then I'm going to do that also. But I think
Ricky,
the difference was in Sacramento, Coach Mata basically told me if I didn't shoot, I would be put on the bench. So this was my first time my coach told me to shoot.
Well, hey, was that, Antoine, was that better than, because I think in Atlanta, you guys, every year, I thought you guys were a factor in the come playoff time with yourself, Doc Rivers, Randy Whitman, all those guys. What did you like better? Was that more fun playing with those guys? Did you develop a better relationship, or was Sacramento just as nice?
Well, for me, it was kind of different on both ends. In Atlanta, they really didn't play me a whole lot during the regular season, so I didn't truly get to enjoy the NBA game at that time. I was kind of sitting around studying more so. Whereas in Sacramento, I was thrown to the wolves, hey, you have to be the man. You have to go. I had a bunch of rookies with me at that time, L Train and a couple of other guys. So I had to come out with a different attitude. And it just showed me with the NBA that you had to be able to compliment who's on that team and the coaching ways they do things.
When you came to Sacramento and you have to deal with a guy, say, I know who the L Train is. A lot of people out there might not know who Lionel Simmons is. When Lionel Simmons came to the team, did your role go up or did it pretty much stay the same? Because I know he was also brought in to score.
Oh, it was pretty much the same. You know, we still had Wayman Tisdale also. So, you know, I was basically the center and slash forward, and Wayman was center slash forward, and then Lionel was small forward. So we just, you know, we attacked that way. I mean, at home, we were a beast. On the road, not so much. I don't really want to talk about on the road with Sacramento.
I can understand. But, hey, look at it this way. You had the opportunity to either stay at Sacramento and play 82 games or the option of taking 41 on the road. I don't want to upset people, but I've been to Sacramento, and I was told when I got there to head straight to old Sacramento. So I didn't really know what was going on, but I know at that time the Sacramento basketball wasn't quite what I expected as far as being there in the city. So did you get an opportunity to explore old Sacramento?
Oh, yeah. I explored old Sacramento. I hung out with some Hollywood stars that kind of owned things in that area. We enjoyed the time. It's just for some reason, we couldn't win on the road. It was one of those things. Of course, in the NBA, when you're going against Beast every night, you never know if you're going to be able to get on that road. And unfortunately, we couldn't get on the road, but at home, you didn't want to walk into Sacramento.
Hey, you know, you later in your career, you went in Utah with Carl and Stockton. What was that like? You guys had an epic series against the Bulls. Talk about that.
Oh, man, that was probably one of the greatest times of my life, you know, getting to play with those two gentlemen, with my buddies, Greg Foster and Chris Morris. And, we had good times. We had guys that just cared about the team. You know, they really wasn't worried about, well, who's scoring a lot, who's doing this, who's doing that. We became a true team. We just wanted to show everybody we could win.
Is that chemistry important?
To me, it's always very, very important, especially when you get later in the season, because that's when things get a little bit rough. You get trades going on. You get all kinds of things. And, you know, some friendships can get frayed, obviously, over trades. So things can get crazy at that time. So I enjoyed the fact that we stayed a team, a strong team the whole time. And if it hadn't been for that half season, we'd have won it all.
Big fella, who do you think you play with? A lot of guys, and you know, in the NBA, people don't know. That's a long 82-game season, and sometimes you got, you know, it gets kind of monotonous. And you forget what city you're in and all that kind of stuff. So you have to kind of have guys to lighten up the load, guys that can make you laugh. Tell us a little bit, because I kind of know, and I want the people to know, what was it like playing against my buddy, playing with Chris Morris, my old teammate with the Nets?
Oh, my God. Chris. All right. That's my boy there. Matter of fact, if you look, we had the same tattoo. That's my dog right there. He's hilarious, but he's a great player. People just don't know how good he would have been if coaches gave him a chance to do what he did best, which is scoring dunk on people. I mean, he's a hilarious character, though. If you hang out with him, you know Chris is great to be around.
Ricky, I'm going to give you a little part of history. I don't know if people that know it or not, but if you recall, they started the raising the roof in the NBA after guys hit a three-pointer.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I definitely did.
Chris Morris was the first one I ever saw do the raise the roof. So I'm kind of sending a shout-out, giving my boy a little love out there. Mo might have started a new tradition back then that time, and I wanted to make sure he got his credit for it.
Well, that's right on, because, you know, he definitely did start raising the roof before anybody I knew of.
But, you know, man, it's so good to be able to talk to you, Antoine. And there's so many guys like you that were quality NBA players that some of our listening audience may not know about. Do you ever feel that your career was underappreciated, or you just enjoyed those great times and don't worry about all the other?
Well, I really don't worry about all the other. You know, I got my chance to get out there and play. Some things were great and some things were terrible. And it's like life. You learn to live with whatever faces you. You learn to take and enjoy the things that God gives you. And then you also learn to enjoy the lessons that he teaches you. So, I mean, either way, it ends up coming out positive for you if you look at it the right way. And that's where I look at it, you know. If it was something bad, obviously he was trying to teach me something. So.
Right.
This is a blessing to even have stepped on the floor in the NBA. So, you know, I praise God and give me that chance to do that.
Amen.
After 17 years and the relationships, I'm sure all that has to be special for you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to this day, I still got friends that, you know, I just called what's happening. Me and X and Cliff are still great friends. So, I mean, you know, this has been a super experience for me. You know, I've traveled all over the world from Euro ball to NBA ball to ABA ball. I've had a chance to touch it all, and it was a great time for me.
Antoine, how was your time in San Antonio? Did you enjoy, did you learn a lot playing with the Spurs?
Oh, yeah. You know, I had Bob Bass and those guys there at that time, so I was definitely learning the whole time. We had an assortment of different coaches, so I learned how to play under different coaches and learned to accept some things that I couldn't change. You know, it was sometimes I thought, well, I should be starting over this guy, and then I look up and say, oh, okay, well, maybe I understand because his contract was so high they had no choice but to play him. You know, so that's why I've always looked at the whole thing. It's just, hey, I get my chance, I'm going to make something of it.
Hey, Antoine, did you ever match up with Anthony Mason?
Yeah, I know Anthony.
I mean, did you guard him much on the floor?
Every now and then, yeah. But I think most of the time they were trying to put him on me to stop me.
that's
when they didn't know I had a little left hand hook and a little stuff working, you know.
Hey, Ricky, I want to tell the people why. First of all, let me thank everybody for tuning in to the African American Athlete, Derek Gervins, as good as it gets podcast. I have to tell everyone, Antoine, I want you and Ricky to know as well. The reason I wanted you on the show is because you're a guy that put in 17 years, and you were very able to always talk to the kids about making adjustments. And sometimes your time is not your time. The coaches might play you, but they don't give you the freedom to play the type of game that you like to play. And you are a perfect example of a guy who played with several different teams. And on every team you played, you were a guy that was a well-behaved guy. I know a lot of times fans looked at you and they say, man, this guy looks like that's a tough guy and a mean guy. But I know the other side, what people don't know. And that's how nice a guy you are off the court. And that's why I wanted you on this show, because sometimes athletes get a bad reputation. All they talk about is what we do on the floor. And I try to make people understand how important these guys are and how we think about things other than on the floor, life after basketball, helping these kids out. And that's something that I've appreciated from you over all the years, even though you might not know I kept up with it. So I'm commending you. You've always been a guy that's straightforward. And the little time that I've spent with you, I found you to be a magnificent guy and a guy that would try to help anyone. And I have to appreciate you and commend you for that. And I thank you for being the type of person that you are.
Oh, well, thank you, brother. But you know where I get it from. I get it from your pops. I hung around. I learned from those guys, him and Moses. And, you know, they made me understand what the game was all about.
Now, you know you just hurt my feelings, man. You know I saw you in Detroit. You know that's my brother. You remember Lil G was playing with us in Detroit. So, you know, I'm a little brother.
Hey, that's a lot of y'all now. Your bro, your pops, everything. You know, it's a lot of the Gervins, and there's a lot of cars now.
Yeah, Antoine. I gotta ask you.
You know what's funny though?
Go ahead, Rick.
No, go ahead, Derek.
I want to just tell him because he spent time with my brother, and a lot of people, you know, they talk about the finger roll and all that kind of stuff, and they don't know what kind of guy George was as far as helping. Antoine, tell us a little bit, if you don't mind, about your experience dealing with my brother, Ice Man.
Let me put it like this. You would think that as much of a superstar as he was, he'd been one of them guys you go up to and say, hey, can I get an autograph? And he'd be, I'm doing something. Get back with me later. G was never like that. I've asked him to do camps out of the blue, and he showed up. He didn't ask for a dime. Now, I've got players in the league now that I've asked to do camps for kids, and I get 10,000, 5,000, you know, different numbers they won't throw out. G was the top of the line. He's the man. And he did it for free. So he could help out kids. He looked back. That's what type of man your bro was. I mean, he's always, even to this day, if I call him, he'll try to help out if he has time. And that's why I love him. I love him to death, bro. He's just, to me, he's unreal. I mean, your whole family's unreal to me, because I see all the things you do in San Antonio and y'all do around the country. And it's phenomenal for a basketball family to be able to reach out and touch so many lives.
Wow, man.
Okay. I have to commend y'all on what y'all have been doing for the communities all over the nation and all over the world. So I appreciate it, and thank you for being there for me when I needed you guys, because there's a lot of things I wouldn't have been able to pull off without you. So thank y'all very much.
Wow, hey,
you know what's funny? I can tell that Antoine's a terrific guy just in my short time talking with him. But Antoine, man, that's not the reputation you had in the NBA. You were an enforcer. And you just had that look about you on the court, man.
I'm still an enforcer, bro. If you mess with the government, you mess with my family, you mess with my community, yeah, you gonna get the dog out. That's for sure.
Rick,
I guard it like I guard that paint.
Ricky, he's still in shape as well. Antoine, aren't you still playing, I believe, in the league in San Antonio? You play in the 50 and over league?
Yeah, I try to play every Sunday. I'm trying to keep that weight off, man, because once it gets on, it's hard to get off.
Well, I got
to
thank you.
You know, I don't say I'm really trying to play hard and score all that. It's more of just to get a run, to get out to fellowship with the guys still that I know from back in the day.
And that's a great thing to do.
I didn't mean to cut you off. I apologize for that. I did want to ask you, and you don't have to give the best player you ever played with, but who were some of the guys that you enjoyed the challenge of playing against?
Oh, man, well, shoot. I had a great time because I had to go against everybody. I mean, I've had Larry Bird, Kareem, Barkley, Shaq, G. I mean, it's hard for me to say, even try to come up with who's the best player. Because they're just, I mean, each of them brought their own, I don't know what word to use for it. They just brought their own style to the game, I guess I could say.
Yeah.
And style really doesn't bring it out because you see all the things they're able to do. And then at the end of it, you know, walk out and hand a kid your tennis shoes and change his life. For, like I said, those little things to me are more important than the game.
Of all the teams you played on, what was the best team you played on? Was it one of the Utah team?
I would have to say probably the Utah team is an all-together team. Yeah, it would definitely have to be them because we started, like I said, we started combining in those 2 years in a row. We should have won the thing, but unfortunately we ran into a black cat.
His name shall remain nameless.
Well, I just call him the black cat. He's good luck for Chicago, but he's bad luck for everybody else. No, of course, we're talking about the great MJ, if anybody wondering, Michael Jordan. I call him, that's my thing. He's a black cat in my world. I'm the big dog. And we don't like black cats in our neighborhood because they don't bring no good luck. Not to us.
I'm sorry, man.
Oh, my God.
Big dog, you go from our era to now, and I heard you say a little bit about this era, but do you think, is it good that they're trying to continue to grow the game? I ask you because the game was started here in the United States, and it kind of breaks my heart a little bit to see, I don't mind the international players coming over here, but it looks like they're coming over here, and they're more advanced when their careers start. And I know they have an advantage by they able to start playing pros. Like, I'm going to get on Luke, like Luka Doncic started playing pros at 15 or 16. Do you think the game today is just as exciting as it was then? With the fact that they're passing up open layups and shooting threes, what do you think about the way the game is?
Well, like I said, I still call it ballet basketball. You think you can pull that with a hand check on you? You think you can
right.
dance around, do all that with somebody's forearm on you who can bench press 350 pounds?
Right.
Okay, like I said, for me, this is what I call ballet basketball. On top of it, come on, man, Euro step, you traveling. Okay, what's the new thing? The new thing? Zero dribble?
Right.
Okay, no, we got a new one now. The gather.
Yeah, the gather.
So you can step sideways once, two steps, and you haven't traveled. Well, I understand what they're doing. I understand they're trying to make the game exciting. But at the same time, let's be able to have a little defense, too.
That's my only complaint.
Is there a player today that you admire, that you like to watch?
Well, Kevin Durant, I like watching. Probably Kawhi Leonard, because to me, Kawhi is more of a throwback player. Let me see.
Two good ones right there.
And then my man, the guard out of Dallas, young kid,
Luka,
Donovan.
Luka.
Yeah, I would say he's getting there. And Pazanko, once he gets his legs back, he'll also be tough. So, like I say, I see a lot of them, but then I still rather see the more fundamental game than seeing the Euro steps and all this other stuff. Because to me, that takes away from the game. That's more of a travel. That's saying that you couldn't play under the rules that were existing.
Yeah. And I gotta tell you guys, that's why, you know, I watched the game today. I enjoy it. But it's just nothing like that era that you guys played in. It's at the zenith. For me, because it was a physical game. But guys still got to show their athleticism. You talk about a guy like Chris Morris who could run and dunk with the best of them. But it was some physicality there. It was defense there. And that just doesn't seem to exist nowadays.
Well, you can't touch anybody now. You know?
Yeah.
You barely touch them all. It's a foul going to the line. How many four-point plays have you seen recently? It's getting to be ridiculous.
Guys falling on the floor intentionally. They've been talking. They're going to have to do something about that. I know we've had some situations with the landing zone. But if you look at these guys now, like James Harden, I understand them kind of. Harden is a smart guy. He plays the rules all the way to the max. He uses the rules quite well. The game today, I try to evolve because I don't want to, you know, the old school, maybe we get a bad rap. They say we're kind of hard on the new era. But it's not really that it's being hard. It's just that we know what it's like to the way the game was invented, the way James Naismith meant for the game to be played. And I'm sure you feel kind of like I do. It breaks my heart to take away basically the mid-range game. I always thought that's what the game was about. It was about being efficient. Do you think at some point that the game will kind of go back to where they're involving the big men down low and using the 15-foot jumpers and in like the game used to be?
Well, they're going to have to, because what's going to happen is you're going to make the big guys efficient at doing all the guard game stuff, and then what are the guards left to do? You know, they have to always think about how the game is evolving. If you get rid of this position, those guys are going to have to counter. Now you got a 7-footer running your point. Well, what good is a little 5'2" or 5'7" guy going to do down low? Eventually, you're going to end up working them out of the game.
Right.
So, to me, you want to keep it, you know, guards, forwards, centers. You want to keep all that within the game. You just want the game to evolve around how the game is played and not just shooting threes, not just powering it inside all the time. You have to make it more aware. I would say a 4-point line. I would say other different things that you can add into the game. And you got to have some little physical part to it. So, you know, if guys go into the hole, you got to let the other guys at least go up and try to block it or something, get a little body on them.
When you look at the game today, do you see, as from our day, I believe guys played, we didn't play for the money so much. Guys played because they really had that competitive fire. Do you think the game has changed? Because what I see today is guys are playing more so for their brand and more concerned with that than they are winning. Am I off base on that, or am I kind of?
Well, you're off base 100%. It's more about their Instagram and their Facebook and all these other things instead of, to me, do you truly enjoy the game? Do you truly enjoy the people that you're showing your wares to? If it's about making a sale on your product, that, you know, to me, that gets back to the whole thing, whether or not you truly love the game or whether this is just something so you can make some money. And if you're just there to make money, ain't no problem. We just understand that when you come to do something else, and we got to charge you too because you was all about the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
So, like I say, I'm probably a little bit more weird as far as that goes with guys because I've been around. I've had guys tell me when I was a kid, get away from me. I'm not signing nothing. You know, I ain't going to say the name of the person, but he was a big-time player. And that changed me for my whole life because I would never do that to a kid.
Wow.
So Rick, I want these kids to understand
that.
Now. Excuse me. The only thing I'm going to say, one more thing on that, and I'm going to get off of that, is these kids now better understand that if you don't take care of the kids after you, they're not going to look out for you later. So.
Antoine, I'll just tell you how great a point that was. I have talked to Ricky, and I had told him about my story when I was playing with the Nets. I was leaving one of the games, and we were walking to the cars, and you know how they have the fans blocked off and all whatever. And I'm walking to the car and with my wife, and one of the fans yells out, I didn't sign the autograph at that time. And the lady yelled out, without us, you players wouldn't have jobs. And I listened to her, and I stopped in the middle of my walk because I felt like, man, he was right. So I went back. I signed the autograph for her son, and I shook the lady's hand, and I appreciated her, and I thanked her. From that day forward, I never forgot the fans at any time. And I know sometimes we're out eating with our families or whatever, and we want our space as well. We human beings as well. But from that day forward, the kids became like just everything to me. And her point was really it was a valid point. Without them, we don't have jobs. And I'm glad you brought that up because I thought that was a very important moment in my life. It had a very big impact on my life. It still does today.
Let me jump in with this, guys. What about when fans go too far? And we've had some circumstances like that so far this year. Antoine, I mean, and Derek, there is a space. I'm sure you don't mind getting booed, but there is a line that they shouldn't cross, correct?
Well, I look at it like this, and I'm just old school, so what's going to help me? They physically going to hurt me in one way or another? Not really. And we're here in America. So you have a right to say anything you want. Now, I can tell you, if you come at me wrong, I say, okay, well, then guess what? You don't get an autograph. But I found out I don't have to do that because the man upstairs is going to present you with another opportunity. That person may have called you the N-word. You don't say nothing, really. Well, guess what? His son may be going to your basketball camp during the summer.
Right.
And now I get to change his son's mind on whether or not he thinks I'm the N-word or not. So ultimately, I come back to the situation that God is going to provide. So if I'm going to get upset with that, nah, no thank you. Like I said, let me say what they say. So what? Is it going to kill you? Is it going to hurt you that bad that you can't go perform the next night? We're getting too soft in this world nowadays. I'm sorry.
Derek, you think a lot along those lines, don't you? When you play.
Say that again, Ricky.
You thought along the same lines that Antoine's talking about, didn't you?
Yes. But I know sometimes what we have to realize is going into these games, we already know they're serving alcohol. And every player knows that. Everyone that works in the NBA knows that. So sometimes you're going to have to put up with some behavior. But, you know, everyone's different. Ricky, I'm a guy, I grew up in Detroit. I grew up a little different. People calling me names never really bothered me. I'm just being honest. But I understand there has to be a limit. You know, you start getting people start talking about your families and things like that. There's been situations in the past. I can remember another friend of mine and a friend of Antoine that went into the stands, Vernon Maxwell. So, you know, situations. Yeah, do you remember
that?
Yeah,
well, you don't mess with Mad Max. If you from the hood and you know Mad Max, you already know. Look, you don't go there. So if you're a fan and you don't know what he's like normally, then maybe you might not want to say what you see.
Well, you know, it was the anniversary. I think it was November 16th was the anniversary of the Pacers Pistons melee, and I covered that game. I was there on press row that night, and before the game, my seat on press row was along the Pacers bench, and the guy that started the whole game was behind me, and he was yakking his mouth even before the game started, and he was drunk then, and they served him throughout the game. I mean, you think that they would maybe cut the beer sales off, but they ain't going to lose that money. And then he says one thing, and next thing you know, Artest and these guys are in the stand. No, he threw something at Artest. And Artest went up in the stands, and then all hell broke loose. But you can blame the Pacers and the Pistons for that. But the guy shouldn't have been that drunk at a basketball game.
Well, no, he shouldn't have been that drunk. But come on, we've all been out at night. We've all been out around the world. People going to get drunk. People going to get drugged out. People going to do all kinds of crazy things. But the big point to me is you can control yourself. So if they come off too crazy, no problem. You know what? We'll just end the game right here. Unless y'all can control your other fans, well, let's just stop the game for a minute. We'll go ahead and sit down for a little while, let them think about it. Well, I say I try to do things a little bit different than most would do. I'm not going to attack back because if I do, I'm almost 300-some pounds. It's kind of like back in the day when Kermit hit some people, you know, and I know Kermit feels bad about that, but at that same time, you have people attacking, and your brain thinks, okay, I got to protect myself. The one thing you don't want to do is end up hurting someone because you actually couldn't control what you were thinking. And that's why I look at it. We can control what we think. So what, they got crazy? So what, they were drunk? Okay, I can forgive you because you were drunk. I'm sure you didn't forgive people in your life who were drunk and said some things or did some things wrong too. So I think you need to control it a little bit. But at the same time, people are going to do what people do. So let's learn to forgive and let's move on.
How would you handle a situation? And I know it's sometimes people get testy. There's been a few situations that have went on in Utah, and Russ was involved in one of those situations. And at that time, I thought the fan was in the wrong, but I thought Russ got out of hand. He was over on the side, wasn't even focusing on the game. He got to the point where he was just focusing on the fan. And the one thing I have to remind all the people is you have a lot to lose. These guys, are you making millions of dollars. And so everyone already is not going to be very happy about that. So people are going to try to push your buttons. That's just life. So as us being as players, we have to remember what we have on the line. You're talking about our livelihoods. You're talking about our families. So we have to conduct ourselves. I believe it's the commissioner's job to kind of make it where it's not so out of control. But they have to come up with some kind of situations. Antoine, what you said made sense. Stopping the game, giving people time to cool down and get their heads back together. And I've never heard that before, but to me that sounds like an excellent idea. If that's what it takes sometimes, to get to where we need to get, then those are the things we need to do. The bottom line is safety for everyone. That means the fans and the players.
Oh, yeah. Well, I just think of it like I think of around my grandson and different kids that I'm around, and do you go at them or do you say, you know what, you need a timeout? And that's where that comes from. That's just, like I said, some of the things I think is definitely crazier than most people think. You know, it's just like Wichita State where I told them play angry. People hear that and they're like, oh, that's negative. No, you're taking the things that upset you and you're using them to play better. So how's that bad? So that's why I'm always saying the same thing over and over. Sometimes let's just back up a little bit, take a breather, then we come back at it hard.
Go ahead, Rick. Yeah, I was just saying that makes sense to me. I tell you, Antoine, it has been a pleasure talking with you tonight and going over your career. I mean, it's hard to believe. When you picked up a basketball, did you think you played 17 years in the NBA, travel all over the world, all these tremendous experiences that you were able to take part in?
Well, I never really thought I was going to make it all the way up until I was told by this one NBA guy that he wouldn't sign his steppers for me. And from then on, I told myself I was making it come, excuse the language, hell or high water.
Wow.
So, in my mind, in my heart, yeah, I always figured I would play. But I didn't know how long, and for me to be able to have played 17 years when the average is about 4 was incredible.
Yeah, and to do that, I know you got to have a good attitude and a good work ethic to go with your skill set.
Well, you just got to believe in your coaching. You know, a lot of guys get upset with the coach. Sometimes he may know a little bit more than you know, and he may see something different that you don't see. So I always learn to accept what the coaches are telling you and try to learn from what they're trying to show you. They may not give you the best coaching, but it may be just that little piece that made you that superstar that you turn out to be later on in life.
Hey, the last question for me, Antoine. You mentioned AAU ball earlier. What are your thoughts on the AAU in terms of the development of young players today?
Well, I think it's a good idea on the program. I think they're going over and beyond because there's no kid that should be playing 3 or 4 games a day. Okay, that's too much for the body. The body doesn't have time to regenerate. And to do that for a week or two for games is just ridiculous to me. And I don't think it's about the kids so much as it is about these guys trying to come up and build their brand, their program. You know, I get a little upset with AAU ball because I had my young men in it, and we went to a couple of tournaments, and all of a sudden we would move to a different gym because – we didn't quite fit what they wanted for their superstar teams. Of course, we already beat their superstar team, so to me it really shouldn't have been that way. But it's AAU ball. People have their ways of doing things. Okay. But don't play these kids that much.
I want to ask you this, Antoine, before we get off the air, about coaching, because I think sometimes people have the wrong idea about what coaching is. Some people feel that taking the elite players, as they call them, and going out there and traveling around the country and, you know, winning tournaments, and I think that's fine. But you can tell me if I'm wrong. I think coaching is taking any player. That means the ones that are just starting out, and you build them up, and you see their game come to fruition. You just continue to see the improvement. Which one do you think will give you more satisfaction? You taking an elite team, or are you building your own elite team and starting from the bottom?
I would obviously want to build mine from the bottom. I'm that old school, hard nosed, play angry type of guy. No, I don't want a bunch of pretty boys. That's where I look at it. I want the guys that already, everybody in the name, that I want somebody still hungry, just saying, you know what, he's not better than me. Wait till I get my chance to get him. And that's the type of player I want. I want them country boys. I want them ghetto boys. I want them boys that everybody else say, I don't know if I should take them. Yeah, come on over here with dog. We got this.
You sound like,
because I guarantee you, that team will whoop that elite team. Because why? We ain't going to be worried about no pretty showboat. We here to end your day. That's it.
Play angry.
There you go.
Big dog.
I love it.
I'm going to let you get, we're going to let you close. I got to tell you this, man. First, I got to say this before we close, and I really mean it again. This has been a great show. Ricky and I have did several shows over the past year and a half, 2 years. Today, man, you brought a lot of insight that people needed to hear. And to me, that's great. You're still a guy that I always say about keeping your feet on the ground and head out of the clouds. And for a guy that's played in the NBA, the highest level of basketball, 17 years, I have to commend you once again for being an upstanding citizen, not just a basketball player, for being a great person. And I'm thanking you sincerely from the bottom of my heart for taking time out to come on the show tonight. And I really, really appreciate you.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. And again, tell you, bro, I would never even be close to what I am without him. So I would just, like I said, him and Moses and the guys that came before me, those are the players we need to be thanking, because without them, we wouldn't have had a chance at this beauty and this beautiful life that God gave us. So just thank the older guys, and hopefully the guys will start looking back, and instead of taking all that money and putting it in their pocket, they'll reach back and touch some of the guys that weren't as fortunate as them.
Yeah.
Well, Ricky,
I
hope to see you around San Antonio soon, my man. Maybe I'll see you at one of these tournaments. If I come, though, please just do me a favor, man. Can you get these guys 30 points just so you can show that the old school still prevails?
Oh, yeah, I'll still go out there and drop it one time for them, just once. That's all I'm going to do, though, just one time. ain't no million on the line right now. I go out there and play for fun. It's, you know, I just let them show one time that I still got a little something.
All right, well, man, on that note, we're going to get ready to call it a night. Ricky, you got anything else, sir?
No, I just want to tell everybody, thanks for listening to Derek Gervin's As Good As It Gets Basketball Podcast. And I think our guest, the great big dog, the original big dog, Mr. Antoine Carr.
Well, I tell you what, I thank y'all so much. And you know what? It is as good as it gets.
I love you, big dog.
So
have a good night.
Everybody tune in. Y'all make sure y'all tune in, because they have it going on. You let them know. You let them know. If they don't listen, I'm going to come hunt them down.
Antoine, is there a possibility that maybe I was trying to get someone else on with you? If I can get another one of your Wichita State guys on, can I get you back on the show?
You get me on anytime you want, my brother.
All right, thank you very much. On that note, we're going to say thank you, Mr. Antoine Carr. I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in tonight. Mr. Ricky Hampton, as usual, sir, I thank you for everything you've done for me and continue to do for me, and I appreciate your help, and I hope you have a great night as well.
Hey, and happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
All right, y'all be blessed.
All right,
be blessed.
Sir, have a good night. Happy holidays, everyone.